Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we are going to talk about the myth of learning styles. This is a big one, and I know this one is
near
and dear to your heart.
It's amazing because I cannot convince people that there is no such thing as learning styles.
Right.
If a person believes in learning styles, and I think many people do,
yeah,
you're not going to change their minds.
Right.
That's
no matter what the evidence.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how many studies have been done. Doesn't matter how we approach this topic. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how many textbooks say there is no such thing. It continues to exist.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's fascinating because I read competency evaluations mm-hmm. for juveniles who've been sent to facilities and things like that. And there's always a learning styles section. It's like, why are you doing a learning
styles
section?
They do a learning styles inventory.
And it's like, well, there's lots of opinions to have on it, but it is baffling. It is completely...
This is one of the first things I discovered when I worked in neurology back in the 80s. And it was clear then that there was no such... And I've read this literature. I've reviewed this literature. I've had students review the literature for projects. And every time we look into this literature, it's the same conclusion.
Right.
That there is no such thing as learning styles.
Right. But people hold on to it. Because
there's a whole industry based on this.
It's very seductive to think, well, you know what, if you just figure out what somebody's learning style is, you can teach them anything that you want them to know.
As long as you do it according to their learning style.
As long as you do it with their learning style, then you can teach them anything. And it's inaccurate to say it nicely.
It's intellectually dishonest.
Right.
For a company to sell things based on learning styles is intellectually dishonest.
Right.
There are dozens, scores, maybe hundreds of tests of mm-hmm. learning styles. Okay,
right.
They can't all be correct.
Right.
Okay, that's number one. You can go online and you can take 100 different tests about what your learning style is.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is I hate to use the word fact. However, we don't even know what a learning style is. What does it mean?
Right.
That you learn things visually, that you learn things auditorily, that you learn things, I don't know. I don't mm-hmm. know what it means. It's never been clearly defined.
Right.
There are hundreds of tests of learning styles.
Mm-hmm.
There are hundreds of products available that purport to appeal to this learning style versus mm-hmm. that learning style.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's no research, there's no evidence that anything like this really exists.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not how the brain works.
Right. Right.
I mean, the simple fact is, this is not how the human brain does things.
Right.
Nice metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to simplify something that's very complex. But it simply is not the way the brain works.
Right. And like I said, it just is very attractive to think if we know what their learning style is,
right.
That's our key to get in there. And again, it's just not true. We have to, as you said, the brain doesn't work that way. The brain isn't a visual brain or an auditory brain or a kinesthetic brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brain that brings in information from all of those different sources.
All the senses. Right.
And then it processes that information for learning.
Right.
But we learn different... There's lots of different ways that we learn. Mm-hmm. There's modeling and there's information processing
right.
approach and all these different mm-hmm. theories for how we learn. But we don't simply learn just auditorily or just visually. It doesn't right. work that way.
There was a study done years ago, maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago, that asked people whether they thought they were auditory or visual learners.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were given a series of tasks. And they would predict that I'm an auditory learner, but then they would give them these tasks and they would use visual visual modalities to learn the task, okay? So even we don't understand our own, we don't even understand our own learning style, let alone somebody else understanding it. We can't predict how we're going to learn something. The way the brain works is it does whatever it has to do to learn something. If you really want to learn something, your brain will do what it needs to do with that material under these circumstances to learn it.
Right.
There may be some things you do visually. There may be some things you do with a combination of auditory and visual. There may be other things you have to do that the knowledge exists in your hands. You know, like when you bake or when you make certain foods. The knowledge, you can't explain to somebody what dough should feel like. Oh, you can't explain it in words. You have to feel it. The knowledge exists in your fingers.
And
that's because of the task. It's not because of how you learn. It's the task determines that.
Right. I think one of the examples that people often give is, you know, the teacher can stand up there and can talk about these things over and over again, and I just don't get it. But when she shows an example on the board and she writes it out, then I get it. So I'm a visual learner. No. What has just happened is called multimodal instruction.
Right.
Your teacher provided it to you verbally and visually, and then likely gave you an example, a practice, so then you're doing it kinesthetically, because then you're deaf. So we know certainly, one part of this that is true, is that the more modes that information is presented to you, the easier it is to learn, the more likely you are to learn it.
That's right. The more times you see it, hear it, feel it, touch it, and the more different modalities that are used, the more likely it is that you're going to, that one of them will trigger some learning process in your brain.
And to go with your example, and just to provide a different one, you know, you could take a person who says that they are a visual learner, or a person that's an auditory learner, or even, and say, all right, I want to teach you how to throw a baseball. And you can show them examples. You can tell them exactly what to do. None of that is necessarily going to make them able to throw correctly a baseball. They have to practice it. They have to pick up a baseball and practice throwing it. Does that make them a kinesthetic learner? No. The task demands kinesthetic action, and so it requires kinesthetic practice.
Because the learning exists in your muscles. It doesn't exist in your cortex. Well, part of it is in your cortex, but it exists in your muscles. And that's the same as it is with learning. We don't know exactly where the learning exists in your brain. So you push it enough ways and suddenly one of them works.
Because if it was the case that a person is, say, a kinesthetic learner, how would that person ever learn algebra or chemistry? Those are things that you can't physically do. You can't physically, I mean, I'm supposed that a very creative teacher could figure out a way to physically provide physical examples of algebra. But most teachers aren't doing that, and most people, teachers can't do that with a classroom of 20 or more students. You can't do something like that. But yet, most students learn at least algebra on a basic level. Whether you're a purported visual learner, kinesthetic learner, auditory learner, or whatever. So we know that we can learn regardless of whatever learning style we supposedly have. So, but we need to dispel this myth of, well, I'm not going to be able to get that because I'm a visual learner, and you know, they're only talking about it. They're not showing us what it's.
And motivation plays a role. You know, if you're not motivated to learn something, then maybe you do have to use a multimodal approach. Whereas things that you're really interested in, you can hear it and learn it, or see it once and learn it. So motivation is also a function of this whole process.
And I think that that's, to me, that's the biggest danger. And it may sound weird that I even said it that way, but if you believe that you are a visual learner, and you're in a lecture-based class, and you believe, I'm not going to learn it this way because I'm a visual learner and they're just talking about it. You're not going to learn it, but it's not because you're a visual learner versus an auditory learner. It's because you have no motivation. Your expectation is to not learn it.
That's right.
And so you're not going to learn it.
Right.
As soon as you believe that something is beyond you or out of your grasp, you're going to stop reaching for it.
Right. There's this theory of learning called expectancy times value.
Right. Okay?
And if you don't expect to learn it, or you don't value it, mm-hmm. you know, learning is you have an expectation that you can succeed, and you value what you're studying,
mm-hmm.
your learning is probably going to be enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
Low expectation and or low value, it's going to be disadvantaged.
Right.
And so that also plays a role. And you're right. If you walk in and say, well, I can't learn this because you're not going to try to learn it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
motivation is going to play a role. So that's why I think that we beat this drum so loudly, because there is a danger to holding to this
myth.
Inaccuracy,
right.
this myth of mm-hmm. learning styles, because the more that you hold on to it,
right.
the more you're going to limit yourself, and,
right.
and you're going to force yourself into this cubby,
right.
that, well, I can't learn it unless it's this, and so mm-hmm. you're only going to allow yourself to learn things that are presented right. like that.
And if you have this, if you want to cling to this myth, and you say, well, I'm this or I'm that, but I would like for you to consider changing that
mm-hmm.
Opinion. I think it's particularly problematic if you're a teacher,
right?
And you cling to it, because now you're teaching something that's not
right.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Now you're perpetuating the myth, and you're passing it on. And as right. a professional, you have a professional obligation. Mm-hmm. to avoid doing those sorts of things.
Right.
You wouldn't teach that the earth is a square. You
right.
wouldn't teach that, you know, other falsehoods, you know, that,
right.
that there are superior races or superior nationalities. As a professional, you don't do that sort of thing.
Right.
What you do in your private life is one thing, but as a professional, you have the obligation to some truth.
Right.
Okay. And so that's where it could become a problem.
Is right.
that if you're a professional and you're still clinging to some of these myths that we're talking about this week, I'd urge you to reevaluate some
right.
of them based on the evidence that does exist.
Right. Yeah. And if you're interested in looking at the effects of some of these things, you know, you have the Stanford Prison experiment that,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it was perception, the roles that made mm-hmm. these group of people feel as though they were superior to this other group. But one that I really like was a study, informal study, called Eye of the Storm. It was done by a teacher, mm-hmm. and she proposed to her class that there's a difference between brown-eyed kids and blue-eyed
mm-hmm.
kids,
mm-hmm.
and
they
to see the differences turn. That it makes in those kids, just in that little social experiment that she was trying with her students.
They really turned against each other.
They did.
Wow.
And it was amazing.
Right.
But that's the danger of perpetuating some of these myths, is that, you know, as soon as you create a scenario where one group thinks that they are one type of person and other people are a different type of person, you're going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
In many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, get rid of left brain. Get rid of learning styles.
Get rid of left brain, right brain too, though.
And left brain, right brain. They're related to each other. But yeah, this whole learning styles has to go. It really is causing a problem.
Yeah.
But if you don't believe us, write to us or email us,
mm-hmm.
and we will continue the discussion.
Yeah, we'll send you some articles or something.
Yeah.
So, all right, that is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychRidge podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.